Morning, everyone. I'd like to call to order a Genesis 2026 virtual annual meeting for stockholders. I'm Garo Armen, Chairman and CEO of Agenus. With me today in person or virtually are Stephanie Nacar, Chief Communications and Government Relations Officer, and the following members of our Board of Directors: Brian Corvese, Susan Hirsch, Tom Harrison, and Tim Wright. The other members of senior management of the company on the call today are Dr. Stephen O'Day, our Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Jennifer Buell, Director and Chair of our Executive Council, among others. I'd like to thank them and thank each one of you, whether participating by proxy, in advance of the meeting, or online today, for your time and commitment to Agenus. And now I'd like to turn things over to Stephanie to conduct the formal portion of our meeting, after which I will come back with some brief remarks and answer any questions that you may have. Stephanie.
Good morning. Thank you, Garo, and welcome to all of our stockholders. We will now begin the formal portion of the annual meeting as set forth in the Notice of Annual Meeting and Proxy Statement. I have received an affidavit of distribution from Broadridge Financial Solutions, Inc. that notice of this meeting was furnished by the company on or about April 30th, 2026, to every holder of record of common stock as of the close of business on April 22nd, 2026, the record date for this meeting. The Board of Directors has appointed Terrence Hassett as the Inspector of Elections for this meeting. Mr. Hassett has taken and subscribed the customary oath of office to execute his duties with strict impartiality. We will file this oath with the records of this meeting. Mr. Hassett's function is to decide upon the qualifications of the voters, accept their votes, and when balloting on all matters is completed, to tally the final votes. I have been informed by the Inspector of Elections that proxies and votes have been received representing at least 51% of the outstanding shares of common stock entitled to vote at this meeting. Under the company's amended and restated bylaws, a quorum requires the presence, in person or by proxy, of holders representing a majority of the outstanding shares entitled to vote. Accordingly, a quorum is present, and this annual meeting is duly constituted for the transaction of business. A list of stockholders as of the record date is available for inspection by our stockholders by first clicking on the button labeled Materials, and then using the link entitled Registered Shareholders List at the bottom right-hand side of your screen. During the meeting, stockholders may access the Q&A feature by clicking on the button labeled Q plus A in the bottom right-hand corner of the screen. Questions pertinent to meeting matters will be answered following the formal portion of the meeting, subject to time constraints. We are now ready to proceed with the business of the meeting. The matters to be voted on at today's meeting are set forth in the company's proxy statement. The company has not received notice from any of its stockholders of any additional matters to be considered at today's meeting, and therefore, no additional matters will be voted on. Let me briefly describe the voting procedures. You may vote your shares during the meeting through the web portal by following the instructions listed. If you have previously voted by proxy, you do not need to vote again unless you wish to change your vote. If you have not already voted or you wish to change your vote, please follow the instructions on the web portal for how to submit your vote. No votes, ballots, or proxies, or revocation of or changes to votes, ballots, or proxies will be accepted after the polls are closed. I now declare the polls open for each matter to be voted on at this annual meeting. Proposal 1. The first item on the agenda is to elect Garo Armen and Jennifer Buell as Class II directors for a term of 3 years expiring at the 2029 Annual Meeting of Stockholders. Both Dr. Garo Armen and Dr. Buell's qualifications are described on pages 10 through 13 of the proxy statement, and the Board of Directors unanimously recommends that stockholders vote in favor of both Dr. Armen and Dr. Buell's election. Proposal number two. The second item on the agenda is a proposal to approve an amendment to our 2019 Employee Stock Purchase Plan as amended to increase the number of shares of common stock authorized for issuance thereunder from 150,000 shares to 200,000 shares. A detailed description of the proposal can be found on pages 40 through 43 of the proxy statement, and the Board of Directors unanimously recommends that the stockholders vote in favor of this proposal. Proposal number three. The third item on the agenda is a proposal to approve an amendment to our amended and restated 2019 Equity Incentive Plan to increase the aggregate shares available for issuance by 5 million shares. A detailed description of the proposal can be found on pages 44 through 50 of the proxy statement, and the Board of Directors unanimously recommends that stockholders vote in favor of this proposal. Proposal number four. The fourth item on the agenda is a proposal to approve a one-time stock option exchange program under our 2019 EIP, our amended and restated 2009 Equity Incentive Plan, and our 2015 Inducement Equity Plan, with premium stock prices applicable to director and executive officer replacement options. A detailed description of the proposal can be found on pages 3 through 8 of the supplemental proxy statement, and the Board of Directors unanimously recommends that stockholders vote in favor of this proposal. Proposal number five. The fifth item on the agenda is a proposal to approve in a non-binding advisory vote the compensation of the company's named executive officers for 2025, otherwise known as Say on Pay. A detailed description of the proposal can be found on page 56 of the proxy statement, and the Board of Directors unanimously recommends that stockholders vote in favor of this proposal. Proposal number six. The sixth item on the agenda is to ratify the appointment of KPMG LLP as our independent registered public accounting firm for the fiscal year ending December 31st, 2026. A detailed description of the proposal can be found on page 57 of the proxy statement, and the Board of Directors unanimously recommends that stockholders vote in favor of this proposal. If you are entitled to vote, if you were a stockholder of record on April 22nd, 2026. I will now keep the voting open for a few moments before closing the polls. The polls are now closed. I will now deliver the report on the results of the vote obtained from the Inspector of Elections. The report of the Inspector of Election covering the proposals presented at this meeting is as follows. Proposal number one. The proposal to elect Garrow Armen and Jennifer Buell as Class II directors of the company is carried. Proposal number two. The proposal to amend the company's amended and restated 2019 Equity Incentive Plan is carried. Proposal number three. The proposal to amend the 2019 Employee Stock Purchase Plan to increase the aggregate shares of common stock available for issuance thereunder by 5 million shares is carried. Proposal number four, the proposal to approve a one-time stock option exchange program under our 2019 EIP, our amended and restated 2009 Equity Incentive Plan, and our 2015 Inducement Equity Plan, with premium stock strike prices applicable to director and executive officer replacement options, is carried. Proposal number five, the proposal to approve in a non-binding advisory vote the compensation of the company's named executive officers for 2025, otherwise known as Say on Pay, is carried. Proposal number six. The proposal to ratify the appointment of KPMG LLP as the company's independent registered public accounting firm for the year ending December 31st, 2026, is carried. We expect to report our preliminary voting results, or if available to us on a timely basis, our final voting results on a current report on Form 8-K to be filed with the SEC within 4 business days after the end of the meeting. If not earlier reported, we expect to report our final voting results in an amendment to our Form 8-K within 4 business days after the final results are known to us. That concludes with the formal portion of the meeting. Before I turn things back over to Garo, I would like to note that the remainder of this meeting will include forward-looking statements, including statements regarding clinical development and regulatory plans, timelines, and strategy. These statements are subject to risks and uncertainties, and we refer you to our SEC filings for more details on these risks. Garo?
Thank you very much, Stephanie. Once again, thank you everyone for joining us for our 2026 annual meeting of stockholders. I want to use our time together to speak directly about where Agenus stands today, what we set out to accomplish over the past year, what we have delivered, and where we are focused for the remainder of 2026 and beyond. The past year has been one of the most important periods in Agenus' history. It has also been one of the most difficult. We have had to make hard decisions, sharpen our focus, take important steps to strengthen our balance sheet, and align the company around the opportunity we believe has the greatest potential to benefit patients and create value for our shareholders. Those are botensilimab and balstilimab, widely known as BOT/BAL. Our objectives have remained clear throughout even the most challenging times. Firstly, to build on the clinical evidence for BOT/BAL in cancers that have historically resisted immunotherapy, including, very importantly, MSS, or microsatellite stable colorectal cancer. Second, to support responsible patient access where permitted through authorized access programs, and we'll talk some more about that in a bit. Third, to move BOT/BAL into randomized phase III development. Fourth, to advance BOT/BAL towards regulatory pathways in the United States and Europe. Fifth, to strengthen Agenus' financial position and continue building the manufacturing, medical affairs, and operational foundation required to support the next stage of our advancements. We've made tangible progress in each one of these areas, and I'll talk about them in more detail just now. Let me start with the first item I just mentioned, the clinical evidence. BOT/BAL is our multifunctional Fc-engineered CTLA-4 and PD-1 immunotherapy combination. It is important to understand that we do not view BOT/BAL as simply another CTLA-4 and PD-1 doublet. BOT was designed to be more than just binding to CTLA-4 receptor. It is designed to help activate a broader immune response by priming and activating T cells, reducing bad actors like suppressive regulatory T cells, engaging myeloid cells that can help convert cold tumors into more inflamed or hot tumors, and supporting immune memory, which we believe is critical, and it's critically important to achieving durable benefit, which we talk about frequently. These attributes matter because many of the tumors we are studying are not hot tumors, and where conventional immuno-oncology treatments have historically failed. These are cold or treatment refractory tumors where the immune system has often been excluded, exhausted, or suppressed. BOT+BAL was designed to help re-engage immunity in a way that can produce durable benefit over time. Across our clinical development programs, approximately 1,300 patients have now been treated with BOT and BAL across phase one and phase two trials. With clinical activity observed in more than nine metastatic late-line cancer settings, our most mature data remain in refractory MSS metastatic colorectal cancer. CRC remains our lead regulatory development focus. That discipline is important for us. In heavily pretreated MSS metastatic colorectal cancer, patients without active liver metastases, BOT+BAL has demonstrated 42% two-year overall survival and median overall survival of approximately 21 months. This is a setting where treatment options are limited and where immunotherapy has historically shown no benefit. At the same time, the broader data set, of course, matters. Across multiple difficult-to-treat tumors, including colorectal cancer, ovarian cancer, sarcoma, lung cancer, hepatocellular cancer, and refractory or resistant melanoma, we continue to see a pattern of durability, survival, and immune activity that supports our belief in BOT/BAL and its mechanism, and that it may offer a pan-tumor approach and have relevance beyond a single cancer type. Importantly, that broader vision is not based simply on combining CTLA-4 and PD-1. It is based on BOT's Fc-enhanced design, the biology we believe it can deliver and drive in tumor microenvironments, and consistency of clinical activity we have observed across cold and immunotherapy refractory tumors, as well as warm or hot tumors. The melanoma data presented at ASCO this year were useful in this context. Melanoma is not our lead regulatory path, but in patients whose disease was refractory or resistant to prior anti-PD-L1 or PD-1 therapy, including patients previously treated with anti-CTLA-4 therapy, BOT/BAL showed durable activity. For us, that supports the view that BOT is designed to perform different than earlier generation CTLA-4 approaches, and that BOT+BAL is not simply operating as a conventional checkpoint combination. It's beyond that. So our focus is clear: disciplined execution, first in colorectal cancer, with a broader body of evidence that may inform future development over time in cancers beyond colorectal. Our next objective is patient access. Until BOT/BAL receives marketing authorization, patient access is available only through clinical trials or through authorized access mechanisms where permitted under local regulation. In France, for example, BOT+BAL is available through the National Authorization d'Accès Compassionnel, or AAC framework for eligible French patients with MSS metastatic colorectal cancer without active liver metastases. In addition, platinum-resistant or platinum-refractory ovarian cancer has been approved, and certain advanced soft tissue sarcomas are allowed under the French AAC program. Once again, for eligible patients treated in the hospital setting under the AAC framework, Agenus is reimbursed through the French National Health System. Outside of France, BOT plus BAL may be also available in select countries through paid named patient programs, where permitted by local regulation. These programs are initiated by physicians and managed through treating physicians in participating countries across Europe and South America, including the United Kingdom, Switzerland, Belgium, France, Spain, Brazil, and Argentina. It's important to realize that these physicians are, or these programs rather, are physician-driven. They are not promotional. They reflect physicians reviewing the data, assessing the needs of individual patients, and seeking access where appropriate and where local regulatory systems permit in the countries that I had just mentioned. In 2025, we recognized initial income associated with BOT/BAL supplied through authorized access pathways in the fourth quarter of 2025 that amounted to $3.2 million. In the first quarter of 2026, pre-commercial product revenue was $4.6 million, representing realized income from BOT/BAL provided to hospitals and treating physicians under regulatorily accessed programs. These are early pre-commercial revenues from authorized access pathways. They do not make us a commercial company, and they should not be viewed the same way as product revenue following approval with promotional efforts. But they do reflect, rather, something meaningful. Physicians are reviewing the data, identifying patients with limited or no options, and seeking access where local regulations permit. For U.S. patients, access remains more limited, while BOT plus BAL is investigational, as these pathways that I just described are not available in the U.S. Eligible U.S. patients may seek access through clinical trials or, where appropriate, may work with treating physicians to explore local access pathways for treatment outside of the United States. We recognize the burden that this creates for patients, and it reinforces the importance of continuing our efforts to advance BOT plus BAL through formal regulatory pathways. Our role in these programs is to support compliant access. Medical information, pharmacovigilance, logistics, and responsible data collection where applicable to support the responsibility we have. It's the moral responsibility we have as well. We have expanded with our medical affairs team and infrastructure. We also named BAP through this process as our global access partner to support access requests, case coordination, regulatory navigation, distribution, logistics, and related processes. And this is done on a global basis. This is a disciplined way to support patients and physicians while regulatory pathways continue. Our third objective is to advance BOT/BAL into phase III development, which we have. The global phase III BATMAN trial began enrolling patients in April. BATMAN is evaluating BOT plus BAL versus best supportive care in patients with refractory, unresectable MSS or pMMR metastatic colorectal cancer. This, by the way, is a population with high unmet need. It is also a setting where immuno-oncology has historically shown limited or no benefit. The clinical activity observed in our phase I and phase II studies supports the rationale for evaluating BOT plus BAL in a randomized phase III trial, which BATMAN represents. BATMAN is being conducted as an international cooperative group study led by the Canadian Cancer Trials Group, which we call CCTG, with participating academic networks in Canada, France, Australia, and New Zealand. The study is designed to support potential regulatory submission for BOT plus BAL in this difficult-to-treat patient population. This is an important milestone for us. It moves BOT plus BAL into randomized clinical evaluation and gives us a rigorous path to further define the contribution of these regimens in refractory MSS colorectal cancer. Our fourth area of emphasis has been regulatory readiness. We're preparing for regulatory engagement in the United States and Europe, including potential accelerated approval and conditional marketing authorization pathways. These efforts are supported by the maturing clinical data generated to date throughout the U.S., Europe, and beyond, ongoing clinical and translational work, and where applicable, real-world experience generated through authorized access pathways that we spoke about earlier. We know the regulatory path will require rigor. We also know that it will require a clear articulation of why durability, survival, and immune-mediated benefit matters in evaluating this class of therapy, which is immunotherapy. We will continue to make these cases carefully, scientifically, and with appropriate humility. Regulators will make their own decisions. Our responsibility is to provide the strongest, clearest, and most complete package we can for patients, physicians, and shareholders. The fifth objective is strengthening Agenus's financial condition. At the end of 2025, Agenus had approximately $3 million in cash and cash equivalents. That was a very difficult position for us to be in, and I do not want to minimize the challenge of operating in that kind of a condition. Since then, we've taken meaningful steps to improve the company's financial and operational footing. In January, we closed our strategic collaboration with Zydus Life Sciences. This transaction provided upfront capital, strengthened the balance sheet, and secured dedicated U.S. biologics manufacturing capacity to support clinical development, authorized access programs, and potential future commercial supply for BOT plus BAL. After closing this transaction and addressing several important payment obligations, we ended the first quarter 2026 with approximately $35 million in cash and cash equivalents. Subsequent to the quarter, we received approximately $11.7 million in net proceeds from sales of common stock under our ATM program. That program has helped us navigate difficult financial periods, although we recognize it comes at a cost of shareholder dilution. While addressing these important matters, we have continued to align our operating expense base at around BOT plus BAL priorities. Our previously communicated framework is approximately $50 million in annualized ongoing operating expenses to support BOT plus BAL. Our first quarter underlying operating performance was consistent with that framework. It is also important to distinguish our ongoing operating expenses profile from certain cash payments made in the first quarter. Those payments included obligations associated with Zydus closing, the release of commercial-grade BOT/BAL supply, clinical data generation in support of planned regulatory submissions, and also settlement obligations accrued in prior periods. Those payments were substantial, but they are not representative of the company's recurring operating ongoing expense profile. We are not yet where we need to be financially, and we recognize that, but we are in material stronger position than we were at year-end, and we are managing the business with discipline. That means prioritizing BOT/BAL controlled spend, strengthening the balance sheet further, and evaluating financing and partnering opportunities as appropriate. For the remainder of 2026, our priorities are straightforward. We will continue supporting responsible authorized access programs, such as the French AAC framework and out-of-pocket named patient programs in select countries that we have talked about. We will continue regulatory engagement in the United States and Europe. We will advance enrollment in global BATMAN phase III trial and CCTG and participating academic networks. We will continue to mature and analyze the clinical and translational evidence across BOT/BAL programs, which we believe strongly support the product's activity. We will maintain disciplined capital allocation and continue strengthening the balance sheet. We will continue building the capabilities required for the next stage of BOT/BAL development, including clinical execution, medical affairs, manufacturing readiness, and commercial planning upon approval. Agenus also has a broader pipeline of immunological agents and scientific capabilities built over many years of our operations. That remains an important part of the company's long-term value, but our near-term focus is clear. BOT plus BAL is the priority, and we will not divert resources from work that is required to advance this particular program. Let me close with this. This has not been an easy period for Agenus, nor has it been easy for our shareholders. But over the past year, we have delivered meaningful progress. We expanded authorized access. We recognized initial income from those access pathways. We strengthened manufacturing readiness through Zydus. We moved BOT/BAL into phase III. We presented additional data, including melanoma data at ASCO just a couple of weeks ago, that further support BOT plus BAL mechanistic differentiation and durable activity across difficult-to-treat tumors in patients that have no other options left. We sharpened our operating focus around the program and believe that we can make the greatest difference for patients. There's still significant work ahead. We need to execute clinically. We need to continue regulatory engagement. We need to manage the balance sheet very carefully and strengthen it. And we need to continue earning the confidence of physicians, patients, regulators, partners, and shareholders. That is the work in front of us. On behalf of Agenus, I thank you for your continued support, your patience, and your commitment to patients we serve as we do. This concludes my prepared remarks, and I am happy to take your questions. Please.